Welcome back. We get into our discussions right away here this morning on the budget. The ninth fiscal package to be presented by our Minister of Finance, Colm Ember. And with us this morning to start off our discussions, a gentleman widely respected. He is, of course, consultant business editor with GML. And that is Mr. Anthony Wilson. Let's say good morning to you and welcome to our program. Nice to have you with us here this morning. Seem to be having just a little bit of technical. Okay, let's see if we when let's hold off a bit and see if we could get Mr. Wilson on the line with us. So then probably let's take some of your calls. 627-3223-625-2257. And of course your WhatsApp messages, send those to 306-1065. Okay, I think we have Mr. Wilson with us. Let's see. Good morning and welcome to our program.
Morning.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. It's a morning that some people have been looking forward to. Some people have they wish never came, and that is Budget Day. We have so many mixed emotions these times around when it's Budget Day. You know, all kinds of anticipation, people excited, some people worried. So it's a mix. And having you on the program this morning is setting the stage for all of the discussions that are to come later on until the finance minister presents the budget, which begins around 1:30, closer to 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're really just guessing as to what could possibly come and some of the things that he may or may not have included there. A person like yourself would definitely be aware of the trends that have taken place in the last financial year and some of the projections expected in the year to come. So let's begin this morning by telling us, looking back at the last financial year, how we did as opposed to the budget presented in the last financial year, whether we met some of those targets, whether we fell short, and that will, of course, be the springboard for us to look at what's to come. Let's start there. Give us a review of the last financial year. How did we fare?
I don't think we fared badly at all. The indications are that the economy would have grown slightly in the 2023 period, the 2023 fiscal period, maybe 2.5 or 3%. Certainly not the kind of growth that we would have achieved in previous years before 2015. But it's quite likely that there would have been growth in the economy, and growth in the economy should translate to higher revenue collection, which allows the government to spend money without blowing up the fiscal deficit. Fiscal deficit being the difference between what the government collects and what the government spends.
What level of deficit are we looking for, if there is one?
I think if the GDP of the economy is about $160 billion TT, my back of the envelope forecast of the fiscal deficit would be about 1% or 1.5%. And it would not be as large as many people might think, because I expect that spending, especially capital expenditure in 2023, in calendar 2023, which is from January 1, 2023 to September 30th, 2023. So we have to make a distinction between what is calendar 2023 and what is fiscal 2023. Fiscal 2023 runs from October 1st, 2022 to September 30th, 2023. So my prediction is that the expenditure in calendar 2023, which again is January 1, 2023 to September 30th, 2023, would have been dampened by the impact of the procurement legislation, which was passed in April 2023. And that procurement legislation, I suspect because of the suddenness with which it was implemented, would have meant that many of the capital expenditure projects that the government had put on the table to start in the latter half of the fiscal 2023 period would not have got off the ground or have been fully funded.
There are a lot of indicators that people are going to be looking at. We spoke to a number of people, and one of those, of course, was former Energy Minister Kevin Ramnarine. He had raised concerns about what's taking place in the energy sector. We also spoke to the head of the energy chamber, Dax Driver, as well. And he, too, signaled that things may not necessarily be heading in the direction that we want to, and that's going to have a direct impact on our earning potential, given the role that the energy sector continues to play. This fiscal year, our budget, in 2023, was about $61 billion. Given the variations and all of those things at the end of the year, we're looking at a $61 billion budget. What's your prediction of what the budget may be for 2024?
I think it's going to be very similar to how it ended up in the, fiscal 2023. I think it's going to be based on similar oil and gas pegs. In other words, the 2024 budget is going to be based on about $90 per barrel oil and about $6 per unit natural gas. And it is my belief that that will result in a fiscal package that's going to be about $61 billion.
But those on the global market, when we speak about oil and gas, are those prices sustainable? Would they be realized throughout the year?
With the energy market, it is always extremely difficult to predict where energy prices, oil and natural gas prices, are going to end up. Anybody who tells you that that is a simple matter is not telling you the truth. Oil prices today are just about $90 a barrel. The thing with predicting the natural gas price is a little more difficult, and that is because our natural gas price, the price on which the budget is pegged on, has changed from, let me say that it's changed to a mix of the Brent crude price, the price at which natural gas is sold in the Japan and Korea markets, and the British natural gas price. And therefore, the peg is no longer the natural gas price in New York, which is below $3. The peg is a combination of benchmarks, and I really can't say what those benchmarks are yielding at this point.
Yeah.
But it's probably around $6 per unit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the volatility of the international market is definitely not something you can gauge or be. I mean, there are people who do this for a living. You have companies who give you projections based on trends and all those kinds of things. But you're right, it's such a volatile industry that you really can't tell. One thing can turn it upside down. So that's left to be seen. Before we move on to some of the critical areas that we need to focus on in the budget moving forward, tell us about some of the positives and some of the negatives in the last fiscal year.
Well, Satish, before we get to the positives and negatives, let me just say that one of the things that would worry the Minister of Finance when he's delivering his budget today is the decline in oil and gas production based on trends and his prediction. Oil production is about 60,000 barrels a day for the country, and natural gas production is about $2.6 billion units. These numbers are down from 8 years ago, 9 years ago. And it's clear that the production of oil and gas in Trinidad and Tobago has maintained a level of stability in the 2023 fiscal year, but certainly in terms of natural gas, natural gas production is down quite sharply from the commitments that NGC, the state-owned natural gas distributor, has made to the users of natural gas, the petrochemical companies on the Point Lisas industrial estate, and the liquefied natural gas plant at Point Fortin. I think those commitments are over 4 billion units of natural gas. The current production is about 2.6, 2.7 billion. So we're down substantially. you asked what are some of the bright points, some of the positives in the 2023 fiscal year. I would say some of the bright points came late in the fiscal year, actually in September 2023, which was just last month. And those would include the signing by Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela of an agreement to progress the Dragon gas field development, and the signing by, again, Trinidad and Tobago and Venezuela for the development of the Manatee gas field, again, which straddles Trinidad and Venezuela. Thirdly, there are indications that what is called a unitization agreement between the shareholders of Atlantic LNG is going to be completed by the end of this year. So I would say that those are the bright points in fiscal 2023. Another bright point, which many people may not have been aware of, is the fact that the rate of inflation in Trinidad and Tobago is in decline. Now, that is something that people may not see or feel in their pockets, but the reality is the rate of inflation went from double digits at the beginning of the calendar 2023 to, I believe, 4.4% as at August 2023.
Mm.
So inflation is definitely in decline.
Yeah, it's good to analyze the budget from the statistical standpoint. And there's relevance in doing that to gauge where the economy is and what's going on and whether we're in the right direction or not. But there's an element of the discussion that needs to be had. While we are having these very technical discussions about the budget and the fiscal package and economy growing and all of these things, what is the standard of living for citizens? And how do citizens, how are they directly impacted? Are they feeling the benefits? Will they feel those? Let me read a message that was sent in, and I'll get your opinion on this very same thing. Because at the end of the day, you're talking about people. And you're talking about a financial package that guides the life that people are going to live. So it says, read the message. It goes, and this was sent into our WhatsApp. Your guest says that the economy grew 2%. That's fine. But what does it matter if it grew, but yet people are struggling, including the middle class? Parents cannot buy books. Children go to school for school meals because they cannot get 3 square meals at home. There are thousands who are unemployed. The government cannot refund VAT and personal taxes. It's one thing to talk economics of the economy, but when there is such poverty and squalor, this cannot be right. And the government cannot celebrate in light of the crime situation, which is also a reflection of the state of the economy. So the positives, which is what we're dealing with, we didn't get to the negatives yet. So the positives that you've outlined, are citizens seeing the benefits of that, or is it a situation where it's not at that stage where it's going to go down to the average man?
Well, Satish, I would say in response to the question you got, that we would need to define what or who is the average man that is being referred to.
Mm.
In other words, what salary, what income relates to the average man. So let me turn the question back on you, if you don't mind. Would you say that given your income, that you have had a fiscal 2023 that is better or worse than the year before?
Hmm. Well, you're asking me personally that question?
I'm asking you personally that, yeah.
Well, what I did, and this is, may not be the case of others, is that I found ways to supplement my income because the income that I had wasn't sufficient, given the financial challenges that existed. And I found ways to make more money because I needed more money. That's not as simple right. For the average individual. People who work on fixed income and had to wait for the government to give them an increase or everything else find themselves in difficulties to the point where when we spoke on the program to the Supermarkets Association and others, they've noted that people are buying bare essentials, that the spend of the average consumer has gone down simply because people don't have the disposable income that they had at one point in time. That may be the general consensus across if we're to talk about what's going on. So I don't know if that sheds light because not, the average individual does not have the potential to work two jobs. Most people, because of the job that they work, it's 8 to 4 and 2 hours to get to work and 3 hours to get back home. That's the entire day. And salaries, we know, have not gone up, at least in the public sector, which is what we gauge salaries by more than 4% over 8 years or whatever it is. So really and truly, while there may have been positives in the economy from a statistical standpoint, maybe we should open the phone lines and take a couple calls and find out from people if they believe.
Satish, before you do, I would say that your personal lived experience is very useful because what you said is you, in the fiscal 2023, you attempted to generate more income for yourself. And I would put it to you that that is one option that many people face in this economy.
Mm-hmm.
So if your income is not enough to meet your daily or your monthly needs, basically people have three options. One, they can earn more income, as you said you have done. Two, they can reduce their expenses. And again, you pointed to the fact that many people, according to the Supermarkets Association, are only buying the bare necessities. Or three, people can draw down on their past savings to supplement their monthly incomes. And I would say that that last one is particularly applicable to, for example, the former Petroton workers who went home with, in some cases, quite large retrenchment settlements. And if they are having problems getting a job or getting income, that particular class of workers can draw down on their savings in order to buttress their income.
Yeah. Let's take a couple calls. Before that, let's read this message. One saying, good morning. I've had to supplement my income because my grocery bill has gone up at least 3 times for basic items, such as laundry and canned foods, perishables, market items, etc. The economics of the country, despite 1-2% growth, is not reaching the average consumer. I do not agree with what your guest is saying, and he's not answering the questions directly. The average man in Trinidad and Tobago has had to supplement his income to make it. Let's take one or two quick calls. 627-3223, 625-2257. Emphasis on the term quick. Our special guest here this morning, of course, giving us a critical insight into what's going on, consultant business editor with GMLS, Anthony Wilson. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Dorbasa here, Pinal. People are going to have to make hard choices between sending their children to school, buying medication, eating, and that kind of thing. That is what it has come down to. There is really no way to push the numbers around in TT dollars when we need US dollars to bring stuff in. You know, we need to earn in US dollars. And there's no such thing as a living wage, because that's just different for everybody. So I don't know what they're talking about. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call. Let's take another one. Hello, good morning.
A pleasant good morning, Satish. A pleasant good morning, Trinidad and Tobago. Your guest has been making some statements which appears to me to be vague. So I want to ask him directly. The 2% increase in the rating, how does that affect the common man? Because it has not affected any of us with regard to our purchasing power. And I just want to remind him the increase that they're in government revenue. It is because they had the increase and no spending, so their rating is obvious going to increase. I thank you, Joel.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call. I guess let's get some response to the two calls that we've had thus far, Mr. Wilson.
Yeah. I don't like to repeat myself, but what I said was that somebody who is in a situation in which their income does not meet their monthly needs has three choices. One, increase their income. Two, cut back on their expenditure. Or three, live from past savings. So to answer the second question, the growth in the economy is not going to be felt immediately, but it will be felt eventually. I would say that the decision by the government, which everybody expects to be announced today, to increase the minimum wage is going to be a signal that the growth in the economy is going to be quote unquote trickle down to the people at the lowest end of the income pyramid.
As someone who is involved, as you are, in monitoring economic developments in the country, I know statistics, we have a lot of problems when it comes to gathering data and proper statistics. This discussion on the minimum wage, I consider to be playing smart with foolishness. And I'll tell you why I say that. I might be misguided in my sentiments, and I hope that you'll have the information so that we can set it straight. How much of this population really is paid minimum wage? And how many people will be impacted by a minimum wage that moves from $17.50 to $19.50? Do we have that information?
I would say that I do not have that information at my hand. And you're right, the delivery of putting on data on issues such as people who are earning the minimum wage is generally not available, or it's available with a long lag time. And it is an important question, exactly how many people do earn the minimum wage. I suspect that number is in the thousands. There would be, for example, some security guards who earn the minimum wage. There would be some shop assistants who earn the minimum wage, and so on. It is a not inconsiderable number, but I think as you speculated, most of the people in this economy earn more than the minimum wage.
Let's take one or two calls again. Hello, good morning. Good morning.
Morning, Fetish. Morning, Mr. Wilson.
Morning, Eric.
Mr. Wilson, a couple of questions I want to ask you this morning. The last time you appeared on this frequency, you made the point that the absence of the ability of the minister to collect that 40% of taxes out there is perhaps one of the biggest white-collar crime in the country. And one of the questions I want to ask you, can the minister continue to borrow money for others to steal? And secondly, the other question I want to ask you is this. Given the state of the economy at this point in time, how much money do you think the minister has to borrow in order to keep the economy stable and not capsize the boat? He needs to rock it, but how can he do it without capsizing the boat? Because that is the big question here this morning. I'll listen to your comments.
Okay, thank you so much for your call. Let's get your comments on that one, Mr. Wilson.
Where do I start? Maybe I should start with the question of how much money does the Minister of Finance need to borrow in order to not capsize the economy. So I would say it would be less than in the 2020 and 2021 fiscal years. If I were to put my head on a block, I would say it would be about $5 billion, which in the scheme of things is going to be quite acceptable, given where the economy's debt level is at now. It came down quite substantially in the 2022 calendar year. It would be edging back up now because the Minister of Finance has to meet commitments to run the economy in for 2023. I would say the borrowing in 2023 would be about $4 to $5 billion TT dollars. As I said, that is quite an acceptable rate of borrowing for an economy like ours. Going back to the first question, you have callers with fairly long memories, given the fact that that first caller was able to recall that I made a statement that the non-collection of taxes is a huge problem in this country. I don't recall saying it was 40%, but it is quite a considerable amount of money. And clearly, the government needs to do much, much more in getting the people who are liable to pay taxes to actually pay those taxes. One solution is the implementation of the Trinidad and Tobago Revenue Authority, but it is not the only solution. The government needs to be a lot more active in finding people who are generating income and insisting that those people pay their fair share of taxes according to the income that they're generating.
One of the other things, because we're coming close to the end of our interview here this morning, aside and apart from the minimum wage, which is where a lot of the focus seems to be this morning and for quite some time, there's the issue of foreign exchange and and the issue of our depleted foreign reserves going down to 6 point something billion, I think it is, from wherever it was when the Minister of Finance started, 11 point something billion, and the availability of foreign exchange and how that is impacting on business. The most recent significant development, of course, being Republic Bank limiting the amount of foreign exchange people can use for their credit cards, which was described by several business chambers as debilitating. What's your view on how you think this foreign exchange issue is going to feature in the fiscal package for 2024?
Okay, so when you say the foreign exchange issue, I think your callers need to be very clear on exactly what that issue is. In my view, the issue is the issue in Trinidad and Tobago with regard to foreign exchange is that the foreign exchange that Trinidad and Tobago is generating is being consistently outstripped by the demand for foreign exchange in this country. Let me say that again, maybe in another way. The demand for foreign exchange in Trinidad and Tobago on October 2nd, 2023, consistently outstrips the supply of foreign exchange in this country. And it has been like that since, as far as I can determine, since at least 2008, which is as far back as the central bank statistics on this issue go. So not only does the demand for foreign exchange outstrip the supply of foreign exchange, but that is happening at an exchange rate, the main exchange rate being the TT to US exchange rate. And in my view, that rate is being subsidized by the central bank. And the proof of that subsidy is the fact that the central bank has to intervene in the foreign exchange system by selling foreign exchange to the authorized dealers of foreign exchange on a monthly basis. And that intervention is to the tune of $100 million a month or thereabout, which works out to be $1.2 billion a year. That money that the central bank is selling to authorized dealers comes from the foreign reserves. The foreign reserves of Trinidad and Tobago are basically the US dollar taxes that the energy companies pay to the government on a quarterly basis. So the government receives US dollar taxes on a quarterly basis. The central bank disburses $100 million on a monthly basis. And therefore, the decline in foreign reserves that you noted for the period 2015 to 2023 is as a result of the interventions that the central bank has made by selling from the foreign reserves $100 million a month, $1.2 billion a year to the authorized dealers of foreign exchange, which are in the main the commercial banks of this country. Yeah. The fact that people cannot get the foreign exchange that they want. You reference the SMEs is an indication that the demand for foreign exchange way outseeds the supply of foreign exchange at the current exchange rate.
Yeah. Mr. Wilson, I'm sorry to have to interrupt our discussion, but we're going to have to leave it there because I do have a couple commitments to just before the news. We've only scratched the surface. And I'm sure that post-budget, we're going to have another discussion. So I want to thank you this morning for being here with us, giving us your insight into what may or may not come. And I'm positive that we'll have another discussion moving forward. Thank you once again for being with us here this morning.